Human Resources and Employment Law Advice on Kerry Today. Brought to you in association with the HR Suite, now part of NFP. Providing brokering expertise in commercial insurance, employee benefits, HR and health and safety.
It's indeed, Carolyn Reedy is with us on the line. Carolyn, good morning to you. Good to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you too on this lovely sunny morning, Gerry.
Indeed. Some people might be thinking of being retired from working to get out and enjoy the sunshine, Caroline, while they can. That's where we're starting this week, though, because there are significant change has been brought in relation to the retirement age. New age retirement rights have come into force, or will come into force next week. That's the 29th of June, next Monday. The legislation allows eligible workers to choose to remain in employment beyond their contractual retirement age, where that age is below the state pension of 66. Thousands of employees at the moment are forced to retire 65, as stated in their contracts, which they signed many years ago, but it's a year before the state pension kicks in.
It is indeed. So what it means is, like, in practical terms, I think this is a very good piece of legislation, because people now, if they want to wait until their pension age kicks in, they can basically apply to their employer no less than 3 months before they're due to retire to say, look, I don't consent to retiring younger than that. And the employer is obliged to reply with a reasoned, objectively justified decision within 1 month. But being honest, Gerry, if I was advising clients, I would be definitely saying they should give the employee, once they're fit and healthy and able to do the job, the opportunity to stay working until 66.
Yeah, because if they're leaving anyway, I mean, they're walking out to the door, depending how long they've worked with all that institutional memory. If they're doing a good job at 65, there's no reason to think they wouldn't be able to do one for one more year at least.
Exactly. So without doubt, I think you've got to remember, if you don't give an objectively justified decision and reason, ultimately you're open to an equality claim. And we've seen some really high profile, very successful cases where employers weren't able to objectively justify that retirement age. So it's definitely one that is a real red flag. So as an employer, the safer option is to allow the employee work up to the pension age, which currently sits at 66, and then you don't have to get into that objective justification. But ultimately, we're starting to see Europe recommend that, you know, there shouldn't even be a contractual retirement age in contracts. So I think this legislation is going to be potentially trumped in time to come, where we're seeing people wanting to work longer because they're healthier longer, they're enjoying it. They might want to work on more of a part-time capacity, but they're enjoying being at work, and ultimately we need them in the workforce. They bring great things to us.
Yeah, and that's part of it, isn't it? It's what people, I suppose, want to do. And the positive side of it, Caroline, is that we are getting fitter and healthier, life expectancy is increasing, so there is that element of people who want to work longer is increasing, or being able to work longer is increasing. And is it about employers and government recognising that, giving people the option to continue?
It is, absolutely. And also, I suppose, financially, some people, if this wasn't there, what happened was employees would have to sign on for social welfare while they wait to be eligible for the state pension. And for a lot of people, that was really causing them upset, because they worked all their lives and then they had to go and sign on for social welfare, which didn't sit right with them. So many employers, you know, were obliging people and letting them work on, because ultimately you've got to objectively justify it otherwise. And I think what we're beginning to realise is age is really a number. Is the person able to do the job, and are they able to do it healthy and well? And I think that's a very progressive way to be looking at it.
Yeah. Would you think, you know, do employers need to take a look at their handbooks, take a look at their policies anyway on the retirement policies of their company? They might have something that's just been there forever. It's always the way we've done things. Because if you breach these new rules now, you could, you know, you could end up paying €40,000 under the WRC if you're found in breach of these new rules.
You could, and you could under these rules. but also the employee may end up taking an equality claim. So you've got kind of a risk coming at you from both angles. You're spot on, yeah. Jerry. All these HR sessions that we've been doing for many years now have really paid off, because you're so right to go back to what does it say in the contract, what does it say in the handbook. And as you said at the top of the show, that ultimately people may have had their contract for years and years, and it could be any age in that contract. A lot of the time they would say 65. Obviously, the pension age is higher than that now. So it's definitely worth, because this is going to get a lot of media coverage as it is so topical. And you'll have employees coming to their employer to say, well, what does that mean for me? And, you know, can I work on longer? So you're absolutely right. Updating your contract and your handbook is always the first port of call. So good advice there.
Yeah, and Caroline, on the wider context of it, there's been a lot of discussion about pensions because of these changes and those sort of things. But I suppose people are thinking now differently about their retirement. There is this idea that perhaps maybe you go to 60 if you have a good pension. You might retire from your long-term job, but you want to go to another job that perhaps maybe gives you a little bit more time, whether it's 3 days a week or 4 days a week. Like, work is changing and people are managing things differently and planning differently. And that can create challenges for employers as well, or opportunities if you want to have older people with your staff with experience who work a couple of days a week, not just a traditional, like, coming in at 20 and retiring at 65. That's changing.
Yeah, I think we're absolutely. And I think we're definitely seeing reverse mentoring and, you know, all of the benefits that having a diverse age work profile brings in terms of, you know, being able to transfer skills and knowledge and experience, etc. And that's working both ways. You know, without doubt, I needed an image drafted yesterday, and, you know, a few of the lads were like, well, this person's brilliant at doing this co-pilot image, etc., which is not in my skill set. So I think it's great that we have such a good diverse workforce that are bringing different skills to the workforce, and ultimately training them is really important. I mentioned AI there and co-pilot. We're seeing now, whether it's the public sector or the private sector, there's huge advances in technology and IT and AI, and the importance, I suppose, of bringing people with them on the journey, upskilling them as they go, is really important. And you have obligations, I suppose, that, you know, you're ensuring that you're bringing people on that journey as well, to make sure that they are upskilled. And then the employees obviously have an obligation to achieve a proficiency level in the skill to be able to enable them to do their job.
Yeah, indeed. On a separate issue, Caroline, one or two queries going. Before we get to that, Mandate Trade Union have come out and have called for changes to be made to employment laws, so employers are legally obliged to offer more contracted working hours to part-time workers. This is a big issue in the retail area. Mandate saying 75% of their members are on part-time contracts, and a significant number would like to work more than the hours in which they've been contracted. Now, this is where obviously an employee wants a certain amount of time. The company has its own business model that perhaps maybe works with plenty of staff and works with inflexibility. It's a difficult area, because if the government gets involved in trying to mandate what you do with your business on how many hours, then that's going to impact your ability to do your business and your bottom line.
Absolutely. And I think there's legislation already that addresses this issue quite well. And I think doing anything more prescriptive than that could be really problematic for our employers. We've seen so yeah. many increased costs for employers around statutory sick pay and auto enrolment, minimum wage. So we, at the moment, if an employee wants certainty of hours, they can request under the banded hours, they can request to be put into a specific band based on the hours that they work. And then obviously they can request the opportunity to work more hours. But it's got to be, I suppose, done in line with business requirements. And I think if that's not the case, it's going to be problematic.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, a listener wants to know, Caroline, what's the ruling on being able to work up to 70? Well, I know in the civil service, you the compulsory retirement age is 70, but it depends on the employer, I'd imagine. Caroline, would it?
It does indeed. It does indeed. But ultimately, if the person's fit and healthy and they request to want to work up to 70, it's the employer then that has to objectively justify why that's not possible. So it's got to be based on objective grounds. So, for example, the person mightn't be physically able, or the person, you know, there's got to be a reason that isn't just their age, because that's what the legislation already that's in place is trying to avoid, that age discrimination, that there's just a set scenario that one must retire at a set age. So we're definitely seeing more and more people who want to work on. And then, of course, we've loads of people who are counting down the days to their retirement as well. But ultimately, this is trying to give people choice and options. And also, we have a full labour market. So I think it's a good approach to be taking to say, if the person's fit and well and healthy, engage with them at least on an annual basis to identify what are their plans, what are their requirements. And part-time is a really good option around that as well.
Yeah, okay. Listener gets in touch with Caroline. Advice, please. What course of action should be taken when a delivery driver has a small smell of drink off him, noticed fairly regularly by more than one staff member, and hearing rumours of a drink-driving habit? In this age of litigation, one is afraid to accuse on the spot, ring his boss, take his keys, bring the Gardaí in. Is it to let him away, then call the guards? It's on one's conscience regardless. It's a difficult issue.
It's a very difficult issue, and fair play to your listener for being the good citizen in this regard, because ultimately what we don't want is for somebody to have thought somebody was under the influence of an intoxicant and then for there to be an accident. I suppose what I would say is two things. One is you're making an allegation which you don't know if it's true or not. So ultimately I would always tread carefully around that. And by doing something like, you know, ringing the employer to say, look, I'm not sure am I right or am I wrong, but I'm concerned about the fact.
I have a concern.
ABC, yeah. Exactly. But I think in the moment, if you feel somebody's sitting into a car, you've also an obligation to potentially say something to them. And again, you're saying it in a non-accusing way, which is along the lines of, look, I'm just concerned you don't seem to be yourself. You don't seem to be okay. Are you sure you're okay to drive? Obviously, you can't force somebody not to. But often by even just saying that much, the person may get the realization, oh, my God, I better not sit into the car, you know. So I think it's always the right approach to at least flag it, because, God forbid, the last thing you'd want is to, you know, have felt that there was something wrong and then an accident ensues.
Yeah, okay. Listener is working, is 65, working part-time on illness benefit for the last 6 months. If she has to stay on illness benefit, would she be better taking early retirement? She'll be 66 next year.
I think that really is down to how well the person is. Ultimately, they're going to get the state pension age once they reach 66, and depending on what the retirement age is in the company. Most organisations have, you know, the statutory sick pay. Obviously, it's a legal obligation, but that's only for 7 days. So your listener is obviously on illness benefit now. So I think if you feel you're not going to be in a position to return to the work environment between now and when you plan to retire, I'd have that conversation with your employer, and at least you can facilitate them to go away and get an alternative person to fill in, etc. And also you can move forward yourself. So I think that's a conversation to be had with social welfare and a conversation to be had with your employer.
Okay, all right, brilliant. Caroline, listen, we'll leave it there. Thanks a million for answering your questions again this month. That's Caroline Reedy of the HR Suite for our HR slot. Get your questions in for her. Kerry today at radiokerry.ie, the email address to get to, or any of our numbers for Caroline in confidence. And we'll put those questions to her this time next month.